906, 907, and 908 read together?
Absolutely. 906, 7, and 8, please.
906, authorize a service and maintenance agreement with Portland General Electric Company in the amount of $1 million for transmission maintenance services for the Portland Hydroelectric Project. 907, authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Eugene Water and Electric Board in the amount of $420,000 for scheduling services for the Portland Hydroelectric Project. And 908, authorize a power purchase and sales agreement with Portland General Electric Company for the sale of hydroelectric power generated by the Portland Hydroelectric Project.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor and colleagues. We've invited city staff to give us a brief presentation today about the city's Bureau of Hydroelectric Power and the options for the future. Today's presentation is a follow-up to the what I thought was informative and useful City Council work session that was held last Tuesday. We have the following staff here to present and answer your questions. Mike Stewart, Portland Water Bureau Director. Karen Moynihan, Senior Deputy City Attorney. Ken Rust, the City's CFO. Following their presentation, we will ask Janice Thompson from the Oregon Citizens Utility Board to come forward and offer her comments. And following the presentation, I intend to offer an amendment, Mayor, co-sponsored by you, which would retain all the revenues from this bureau to further enhance our reserve fund to cover the potential downside in the first 3 years. So we'll bring that amendment following the presentation. Mike, welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, commissioners. Glad to be here again, and we're here to talk about contracting for the hydroelectric power operation that belongs to the City of Portland. In addition to the individuals that the commissioner mentioned, we also have here, if necessary, Ken Kaufman, our specialty attorney for energy matters, and Tim Belden from Energy GPS, our consultant who helped us through this process. I also have Glenn Pratt and Teresa Elliott from our engineering division that kind of manages the hydro operation. So for background purposes, briefly, we built the Portland Hydroelectric Project in the 1980s. That was actually something that started in the early 1900s with the wisdom of design engineers many years ago who realized it's very difficult to put penstocks through a dam after it's built. And they put penstocks in both dams when they were built. It became economical in the late 70s due to federal regulatory changes, and we began construction in 1979 and began producing power for the city in 1982. Or not actually power for the city, but power to be sold to the grid, benefit achieved by the city. Over the years, the city's invested a total of $55 million in the facility, and to date has netted around $14 million for the general fund. Right now, we have a $1.8 million positive balance in the fund. To be clear, the Hydroelectric Bureau is a separate bureau. It is only managed by the Portland Water Bureau. The funds are separate hydro fund, and that fund deposits money when there's excess revenue into the general fund. The Water Bureau itself does not benefit from this operation. We just run the operation for the benefit of the city. The bonds were paid off in 2016, October, so we are currently a debt-free, carbon-free energy facility. Looking at the two facilities that we have, Dam Number 1, built in the early 1900s, we have a 24-megawatt powerhouse at Dam Number 1. At Dam Number 2, we have a 12-megawatt powerhouse. Those are the two facilities that we operate on behalf of the city. What do they actually do in human terms? In human terms, they produce enough power over the course of a year for about 8,000 average homes. We look at it another way. We also produce enough power to deal with 60% of the city staff, the city operation power requirements. There are three key things to do with hydro operations that must be kept in mind. First and foremost is water supply. Water supply for the city is the reason the two dams exist, and that is our prime driver for all water operations in the watershed. The second priority is fish. We have a habitat conservation plan that improves our regulatory relationships and gives us a guaranteed regulatory environment in which to work, which is really important to us. And the third thing is producing power. So we produce power after the other two requirements are met. For regulatory compliance, we're monitored by Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and we have a habitat conservation plan that's approved by a variety of federal agencies. The power we produce is carbon-free, and we are regulated in that regard by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Sometimes there are conflicts between these three priorities, and they are always resolved in water supply first. The previous agreement that we had with PGE was take or pay. We got paid regardless. Take or pay meant that even if we were producing no power, maintenance would take place, the bonds would be paid off, management fees would be paid, and any licensing and permitting actions were taken care of by PGE. It was a very good deal. Our new agreement, PGE will continue to purchase power from the project if you approve. PGE will no longer operate or maintain the power plant. Over the last 20 years or so, PGE's Westside power operations have become a lot smaller. Marmot Dam and the Bull Run Powerhouse have been shut down, so they no longer keep staff in the area that's convenient for operation. So they don't really wish to operate or maintain the power plant. They do, however, have the power grid in the area, so we look to PGE to maintain the power lines. Council has a simple choice here to surrender the generation license or to continue to generate and sell power. There are consequences, obviously, for either choice. We like to control our water supply, and if we surrender the generation license, we potentially lose control of our power supply or our water supply. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission regulations, because it's a licensed facility, go through a process that can take several years to look and see if it's economical to have another operator. We would prefer to control the operator. And we can also choose to generate and sell power. And I think the proposal that we have for you will show you that it's probably a good deal to continue to generate power on behalf of the city. What does this thing look like? There's four agreements involved, one of which you've already approved. From left to right on the screen, Agreement 1, Operations and Maintenance. That agreement is approved. It was for $8 million over 5 years. The next agreement, going downstream, engineers like to go downstream for some reason. That's how you figure out whether you're on the left side or the right side of the river. Face downstream, left side's on your left, right side's on your right. Going downstream, the next agreement is the transmission maintenance agreement. The Bureau, or the Hydro Bureau, owns about 10 miles of transmission line that moves the power from the two dams out to PGE's energy grid. Tripping a little farther downstream, Agreement 2 up there is a power purchase and sales agreement. Its value is variable, and it's a 15-year agreement. And bottom right of the screen, Agreement 3 is a scheduling agreement. EWEB operates, it's an electrical and water utility, and they're going to do the scheduling for us. It's $400,000 in value over 5 years. Those are the basics of the agreements. Risks. We have five major risks to deal with, and we have mitigations for each of these. The two big ones, 1 and 2, weather and water, are kind of interrelated. Weather delivers the water. Weather also makes it a drought or dry. the amount of water that we have in the reservoir affects what we are able to do, and in some respects, more importantly, the temperature of the water in the reservoir is important because we have fish responsibilities that are partly driven by volume and partly driven by temperature. The third risk is price. We're operating in a variable power market that's heavily influenced by the price of natural gas at the moment. So there is pricing risk, and that's one of the things we have mitigated for. We have operational risks. For example, the wicker gates on a generator stuck or something like that. Those are in some respects easier to manage. And then we have regulatory risk. The regulatory risk would be some new regulation that would pop out that could affect our operations. Generally speaking, those are very long-term things because you have to go through the Federal Administrative Procedures Act, and there's a lot of public process involved. So it could affect us, but we would probably have notice, so to speak. Now I'd like to turn it over to Ken, who's going to talk about the financial analysis of the project.
Thank you, Mike. For the record, I'm Ken Russ. I'm the city's chief financial officer. It's a pleasure to be here this morning, Mr. Mayor, and members of the council to talk to you about the financial aspects of the agreements that you're considering. As you've heard, you know, we're going to be operating under a different set of agreements that reflect kind of the modern world in the power markets, and it's very different than what we've operated on historically. The Water Bureau has engaged professionals to help understand.
Excuse me one sec. Mike, are we done with the PowerPoint?
Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't. Excuse me.
Are we going to, if we're done with it, let's bring up the.
No, I just hadn't hit the button.
Okay.
There we go. Sorry.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. I think you're one slide ahead of me, though. That's usually the case. You're always ahead of me.
There you go.
All right. So as we've been looking at how to understand the risks associated with the power sales agreement, we've had experts advising the Water Bureau on the power market and the agreement and the terms and how to frame this. What we're trying to do is maximize revenue and minimize risk, and those are kind of competing goals, and we've tried to capture that inside the agreement. And one of the big risks that Mike talked about is weather and rain and rainfall, and particularly in the winter months because that's when power is generated for us. In the summer months, it's not delivering power. So we really care about wet weather in the wintertime. So when you think about rainy day reserves, we want the opposite. We need sunny day reserves because we don't want sunny weather, dry weather in the wintertime when we generate power. One of the benefits of the agreement is that we're able to establish a contract price for the sale of power to PGE. And because of the nature of the power, both the energy component and the capacity of that power, we've been able to negotiate a contract price that is above the market, a wholesale price for energy. In the early years, that contract price is slightly above market, but then it jumps after year three and escalates thereafter and provides the ability for us to generate revenues that are quite favorable to us over the life of the contract. One of the things that we're required to do in this contract is to specify how much power we're going to deliver each year to PGE within a certain range, and we can set that each year. I'm going to talk a little bit about how that affects us financially and some of those risks. We'll go to the next slide. Based on the terms of the agreement, if we have an obligation to deliver this specified amount to PGE, and if we don't do that, we potentially are subject to what are called under-delivery damages that we would owe PGE. And that really only happens if we're unable to deliver what we're required to deliver, and the price that is in the market at that point in time is higher than our contract price, because PGE has to go out and buy the power that they thought they were going to buy from us that we weren't able to deliver. So that's one of the risks we have, but we actually have some tools to mitigate that risk that make that a relatively small dollar risk for us overall when we look at the agreement and the projections. We have about less than two-thirds of the power that we're specifying for firm delivery and about a third of the power that's as available, as we call it, in the agreement. So we can offset any of these under-delivery damages with money that we earn from selling the as-available power into the market over the course of the year. We also can net out under-delivery damages on a monthly basis, so it's not just what happens on a day or an hour basis, but over a month. We're going to establish reserves. They would be available as well. And we can certainly manage expenditures if we really were in a position where those risks were producing financial concerns to us in the management of the fund. But the under-delivery damages piece is really pretty easily managed within the terms of the agreement. The big risk that we have beyond that component is simply what happens in a low water year with market prices that are low as well. And that's very difficult for us to mitigate against. And there we're going to have to look at the ability to establish and maintain reserves that would be available for those low revenue years, and also, if necessary, to manage expenditures. So those are the kinds of risks that are inherent in the agreement. We've done a lot of work trying to understand, well, what might that look like in terms of financial projections going forward? And we've looked at different alternatives, and we've developed a couple to help test whether or not the fund will remain financially strong over the course of the projection period. We developed a base case looking at historical experience, and we chose to make a projection based on the median results over our historical period and made those projections going forward. And when we take a look at that particular experience, we find that the fund balance in the fund at the end of the forecast period totals in excess of about $7 million. So we're able to pay all of our expenses and generate net revenues and build reserves over time. We also developed what we call a worst-case scenario, knowing how sensitive we are to low water years, and particularly in the first years of the contract when contract prices are not that much greater than market prices. We looked at historically what have been our three worst consecutive water years we've experienced in the project, and we assumed that those three worst consecutive water years would occur in the early years of the contract when contract prices are lowest. And what we found then, even if we project out over the forecast period, that net revenues overall would be lower. We'd generate about $5 million under that scenario by the end of the 15th year, and there is the potential that the fund could turn negative by a couple hundred thousand dollars in those early years. So how would we manage that? I think under that situation.
So could we be clear first? What is the worst case scenario? What's the hit to the general fund?
Our estimate, the worst case scenario, if it unfolded as we've laid it out, is the worst case scenario as a potential negative $200,000 in the fund. But that assumes that the fund wouldn't see that coming. Remember, we have three consecutive poor water years. So after the first year, we may say, you know, if we're planning to make certain expenditures in the next couple of years, maybe we will slow that down and make sure that we don't end up with a second bad year or a third bad year.
Let's assume that, you know, we're not that smart. What's the worst case scenario?
Our projections show it's $200,000.
Okay, so I just want that on the record. So if anybody's saying we have not put what is the downside, there is the downside.
That's correct.
Okay. It's not that assumes three bad years of weather.
In the first years of the contract.
Okay.
If those three bad years, for example, occurred 5 years later into the contract or 8 years later, because contract prices are so
harder
much,
to dig
we have a lot more capacity at that point in time.
Right.
So the worst time for it to happen is early in the contract life.
Thank you.
In addition to that kind of a static analysis that we've done, we've also had the consultants run a more sophisticated statistical technique called a Monte Carlo simulation. They looked at 10,000 different iterations of price and weather and things like that to see what would happen statistically when you look at a more dynamic kind of modeling. And what we found is that only in 10 events out of 10,000 did the cumulative reserve balances end up being less than zero. So basically, you know, under a more dynamic modeling, it looks like under almost all scenarios, the reserve fund will be positive over the forecast period, and the probability of hitting the range of numbers that we've talked about is actually quite high. So that gives us further comfort that the nature of the contract, the terms of the agreement, the way we're planning to manage that should give us the ability to run the project, produce carbon-free energy, and avoid having any financial impact to the general fund.
Okay, so I'm deliberately putting some negative messaging on the table because I want us to be clear about it, transparent and on the record. So you've given us a worst-case financial strategy. We don't actually have, you know, we have a contract that would preclude us from talking about what is the delta above market rates. We know that the contract is above market rates. So if we operated this, we'd be selling on the open market at whatever the market rate is. The contract gives us something above the market rate, but we're not disclosing what that is above. But the key thing, the key point I want to make here is it's above the market rate. So the worst case scenario for us would be we operate it, we take the hits for whatever the market rate happens to be at that time. So let me ask you a question that somebody might reasonably ask. Why can't we disclose that? This, you know, the Monte Carlo simulation, your estimate of the worst case scenario, there are things we do as a council that are far riskier than this. That we're, you know, so what's it on us if we disclose what the delta is above the market rate?
So
why do we care?
I'll let our able attorney answer that.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Mayor and
Good
Commissioners.
Morning.
Karen Moynihan from the City Attorney's Office. The city has agreed to enter into a nondisclosure agreement with PGE at PGE's request because essentially that's how business is done in the energy market. This is not unusual, and it is done and approved when the disclosure of that information would create a competitive disadvantage to the party, in this case, the city. Therefore, there's a public records exemption that allows for that situation. Again, it's not unusual. The Oregon Public Utilities Commission also provides for nondisclosure agreements of this nature. Also, I want to also address something that has just come up recently with respect to reporting requirements that were discussed in the Oregonian last night. There was the issue raised that, well, the city isn't going to disclose in this situation. However, ultimately, those rates will have to be reported. That's actually not accurate. Our assumption is that the reporting requirements that were referred to in the Oregonian were requirements under the Federal Power Act that do apply to sellers of power. In this case, the seller is the city, and the city is exempt from those requirements for two reasons. One, it's a municipality, but if you go further through that exemption, the city is exempt because we generate, we sell fewer than 4 million megawatts per year. So therefore, there won't be a disclosure.
So let me suggest one possible disclosure requirement that is probably the most relevant to the taxpayers, which is if we hit the skids and we hit the worst case scenario, there will be a hit to the general fund. And we will go through, and that is a publicly disclosed number. It would be discussed, I presume, in our budget process. You would have to come back to the city council and explain that there is a need to make up for that shortfall. That would be through our regular publicly disclosed budget process or an interim budget process. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So what about on the opposite side of that? You mentioned there was a one in whatever it was, a very slim chance, but a chance nonetheless. I could definitely see a scenario whereby we have three very dry years in a row and market rates are higher. We don't meet the volume requirement. What about the upside? I mean, that Monte Carlo simulation has an upside too. Tell me about that.
The upside is, I think, I'm trying to remember the numbers offhand, Mayor. I think we're running around a $7 million cumulative fund balance at the end of the projection period. I think the cumulative number is 8 to 9 million plus. I'll have to.
So the downside's about, so you're doing some quick and dirty math, 3 years, your 20 years, it's about an $800,000 downside and about a $7 million upside. Is that correct?
Can you say that? I'm not sure if I'm tracking.
$800,000 downside, $7 million upside. Give me the down and the up.
Okay. I'm.
So you start off $200,000 per year.
Well, the cumulative negative balance, worst case, was $200,000.
That's 200, the whole negative.
Total.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 3 years.
In the first 3 years,
yeah,
$200,000. So it's even less negative than I was assuming for discussion purposes. And the upside over that same period?
During that first three-year period? I'm sure I'm just trying to get the right time period.
Give me over the life of the contract.
Okay. So, Mayor, can I do
this? The projected downside and the projected upside.
Can I make, I think, Can we let's go to
for
the
simplicity
slide.
Purposes.
You have a slide. It's the next slide, the one that follows. Not that one, the next one.
Right.
Mr. Director?
It's up there.
No. One more forward.
One more?
There you go. That's the slide that addresses the mayor's question. So Ken, why don't you walk the mayor through these points?
I want to come back to the worst-case scenario that we built. So, for example, the worst that we saw was a negative 200,000 cumulative in about the first 3 or 4 years.
With the bad weather scenario.
With the bad weather. But then we assumed that we returned to more normal, that median experience. So over the life of that scenario, we resulted in about a $5 million positive reserve balance. So it was simply
It's a stress test.
Yeah, and so it wasn't that even under that scenario, it still turned positive by the end of the year, but there was a period of time during that 15-year time period where it could be slightly negative. So I just want to make sure that was clear.
Very good. That's clear. Thank you.
Said in my version of English, even with a $200,000 loss at the end of the period, 15 years, even with that loss, you'd still have a $5.8 million positive.
And so, for example, let's imagine that happened, that there was a series of weather events that resulted in the fund going negative and it needed to have assistance from the general fund. Well, certainly, those are temporary and transitory events. We expect a return to profitability over the course of the contract. I would expect that the council would demand that the fund pay back the general fund with interest at the pooled treasury earnings rate that it had foregone, and it would be made whole as soon as possible.
And that would be done in a public environment.
Correct.
Correct. And why don't you walk through this summary slide, because it's catching my attention anyway, so you might as well go through it.
So in summary, it's a net positive deal no matter how you cut it. Even with the $200,000 loss over 15 years, the low is $5.8 million in net revenue. Our predicted ending fund balance using the Monte Carlo simulation is $7.6 million, and there's a 99% probability of positive net revenues overall. We think we have mitigation tools in this contract to take care of all of the risks, although there's always some risk, 1% in this case. Those mitigation tools include nominating the power, which balances every month. They also include special funds set up to cover repair and replacement and the loss scenario, and I think Commissioner Fish is going to offer an amendment to make that even more clear. We maintain control of our water supply. We don't run the risk of having someone else come and be sitting at the base of my dams. I think of them as my dams. And we continue to produce carbon-free energy from a renewable source. Thank you, and we're available for questions.
Yeah, very helpful. And Ken, I appreciate this, plus the work session. I appreciate your answering my questions. That's helpful.
So, Mayor, why don't I offer the amendment now, and we'll put it on the table. And Karen, this is technically an amendment to which of the ordinances, 905, 6, or 7?
No, it's 8.
Eight.
I don't have that.
Excuse me. Sorry. So I'd like to thank you, Mayor. I would like to offer an amendment to ordinance number 908 based on the feedback that we received at the work session, particularly from the mayor. And we've further revised in consultation with Andrew Scott in the budget office. The amendment would read as follows, quote, that all revenues, including excess annual revenues, comma, beginning balances, comma, and surplus fund distributions from the Portland Hydroelectric Project accounts and operations, comma, shall remain in the Hydroelectric Power Fund to ensure sustainable financial management of the Portland Hydroelectric Project until such time as the city's chief financial officer, comma, in consultation with the Water Bureau, comma, has determined that distributions from the fund can be made and are in the best interests of the city. I offer that as an amendment.
Second.
We have a motion for an amendment from Commissioner Fish, a second from Commissioner Fish.
Something like that.
These guys. We have a motion from Commissioner Fish, a second from Commissioner Fritz. Any further discussion on the amendment?
Only that this has been reviewed with the city's budget office, and prior to us taking this action, the net revenues were taken out of the five-year forecast for budgeting purposes. So there is no – this, if adopted, this does not create any kind of shortfall for other investments the city would want to make with general fund resources, because it is no longer part of our five-year forecast.
Very good. And what I'll do is I'll leave the amendment open. We'll take public testimony. We'll hear feedback, and we'll vote on both the amendment and the main motion. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. And just for the record...
Mayor, may I just clarify something?
Please.
We'll take testimony, and then I am going to propose that all three ordinances be held for a vote on August 30th. This will allow the Portland Utility Board to review the presented information at their work session and council today. And if these agreements are passed on the 30th, I will request that they go into immediate effect as the current agreements expire at the end of the month. So our preference is to take testimony, have these return on the 30th as amended for a vote.
We would vote on the amendment, though, right, today?
Yes, we would.
Very good. Public testimony on these items.
No one signed up.
So I want to invite, well, so we did, we skipped a spot. So Joe, hold one sec. I neglected to invite up the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. So Janice, would you come forward?
It's okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
You want me to be the utility?
No, we have one other.
I can do that.
Stay there. We want your testimony, but we're going to ask the Cub just to present their thoughts. They were
right
part
now?
They were part of a panel, and I overlooked them.
I'm so sorry.
No problem.
Do you feel rejected?
Not at all.
He does that to me, too.
Janice Thompson, Oregon Citizens Utility Board, or CUB. CUB has been tracking this issue, and thanks for the Water Bureau for a couple of briefings over the last several months leading up to this. But we're tracking this issue for two reasons. One is from a City of Portland angle, since though this topic involves general fund dollars, the hydro facilities are in the bull run and, as you've heard, need to be operated with energy production as a third priority after water supply and fish habitat requirements. But the second reason is that CUB also cares about Portland General Electric ratepayers, though the major analytical focus of our regulatory team right now is on a major PGE rate case and their Integrated Resource Plan, or IRP, which has been in the news recently. But the second point highlights that though PGE is interested in Portland's hydropower resource, this is a tiny slice of PGE's overall energy needs, and that's kind of a backdrop for recognizing that that dynamic affects Portland's negotiating clout. I could not be at the work session, but I did send out three points. One I've just made in terms of like the energy being third priority. Just the other two, just to get them on the record here, is that the current, though soon to expire at the end of the month, agreement between the City of Portland and Portland General Electric has been a great deal for Portland. That deal is ending, and it is not at all inappropriate for PGE to want a new deal. So there's nothing, you know, nefarious, if you will, on PGE's part in terms of saying we need a new agreement. Similarly, the need to develop a new agreement is not due to any mistakes or missteps made by the Water Bureau and the current management. Another point is that it was most appropriate, and in an earlier briefing I was very gratified to learn that the Water Bureau had secured consulting services regarding energy law and energy marketing. This is a complicated topic, and obtaining expert resources was a very important step taken from the Water Bureau. Like I mentioned, I could not be at the work session. I did watch it later, and I thought it was very appropriate that a question was answered by the Water Bureau's, one of the Water Bureau's consultants, in terms of review that was done of market dynamics. I think it's important that the Water Bureau then listened to their consultant. An RFP isn't always needed to get a sense of market possibilities, and RFPs have their own, you know, confidentiality dynamics as well. And so what the Water Bureau did do regarding kind of the market research seems both adequate and prudent. Regarding the confidentiality issue, has been mentioned, CUB deals all the time with private utilities before the Oregon Public Utility Commission, and very frequently in those proceedings there is confidential proprietary information. So that dynamic in this situation was certainly not a surprise, you know, to CUB. To conclude, we do not recommend surrendering the generation license, which in effect I think you would start the process of doing if you do not adopt these resolutions, ordinances. As has been stated earlier, I think it's important to maintain the license so that there's control of the water resources. But the other angle is, as much as there's been very appropriate concern about risk analysis and risk management, if you surrender it, you're actually not going to make any money at all. So I think that needs to be part of the, you know, compare and contrast discussion. Obviously, the contract that is undertaken in lieu of surrendering it needs to be carefully evaluated. But I've been, you know, the risk analysis and management steps seem to reflect a great deal of due diligence and effective work with consultants, and as well as, you know, pulling in the financial resources of the Office of Management and Finance. So,
thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. I'm going to take a risk of getting some egg on my face because it's the first time I heard your amendment, Commissioner Fish. So it's something that I don't normally do, but I was a little confused and a little concerned. We have a lot of concern about residual money being held. A lot of bureaus, a lot of departments have a tendency to say, well, you know, we better reserve something in case, you know, we have a rainy day or it hails or we get Trump in office or something disastrous like that. So we have an automatic knee-jerk reaction when we hear someone say, well, let's put this in the fund over here and have these non-official, non-elected people decide when we're going to move the money out. And with the water department, it's my understanding, is it's really the ratepayers. On, I mean, isn't it the water department?
No, it has nothing. It's not a Water Bureau enterprise. The Water Bureau is simply tasked with managing it. There's no ratepayer investment or liability. That's
okay.
Why
the money
only,
that you want to hold in reserve, who does that belong to?
It would otherwise go to the general fund.
Okay, well, the ratepayers are kind of in the general fund. They are citizens. So, I mean, I know I'm stretching it, but it's still tax money. So we have a resistance to that. I know each bureau likes to have a little cushion, so when something comes up in an emergency, they can react.
Joe, can I explain? I probably was not as clear as I should have been. The purpose of the amendment is to take the net positive revenue, put it into a reserve fund until we're absolutely sure there is no risk to the general fund. And then the CFO, once he or she makes that determination, it can then flow back to the general fund. But it will effectively eliminate any risk to the general fund over the life of this contract. And we think that's prudent where you have such a close call.
I wish I could play that back to you about four times because I think you would pick up what I'm picking up. Somebody's making a decision to hold the money. Somebody is making a decision to release the money. And the citizens have nothing to say about it. That's my objection. So it's the elected officials. You're going to make a decision today. And I don't kid myself. You're going to vote it in anyway.
We're not voting on today.
Yeah, I know. In October, no, August 30th. Is that what you said? August 30th.
August 30th.
Somewhere around it. Well, you're going to do it anyway. But the citizens are not going to be able to say anything.
Yes, they will.
After today.
Yes, they will, and I'll tell you why. no distribution from this fund can go to the general fund without it coming to council either in the normal budget or in one of the bumps. And then it gets called out as a transfer. And so that you and anyone else will have the absolute freedom to comment on that event.
And I would just submit that look at the turnout today, and you can just imagine the turnout down the line someplace. I'm just pointing out, be careful with your reserve funds, that they don't get too fat. That's what we're asking. We want you to be, what's that phrase? Due diligence. Isn't that a cool phrase? I think that's from Brooklyn. I think it's from Brooklyn. Due diligence. Sounds like a Brooklyn phrase.
Very Dutch.
That's what we're asking you to do. And, you know, when you do the amendment and you just do it, I don't know. You know, sometimes citizens look at that and say, hey, man, you know, okay. We don't have any input. And that's why you get such low marks.
Thank you. And just by the way, one of the reasons I wanted this amendment and one of the reasons I strongly support the amendment. In fact, I'll just say I wouldn't support any of this without that amendment. That fund also becomes a marker in and of itself over the years in terms of how this deal is working out for the people who live in this city. Good afternoon. Good morning. Sorry, getting ahead of myself.
Good morning. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Super Watchdog X. Free electricity for everybody. Nikola Tesla. What a mind. Hydropower. Carbon free. No debt at this time on this is phenomenal. Where I have a problem is that the purchase and sale agreement is drawn up to the advantage of Portland General Electric. Absolute great work from your attorneys. My problem that I have is that on the take or pay, I don't want to have something that's debt free and we end up losing money after 15 years. Whereas if you don't have enough power delivered to you, we get penalized and have to pay you. We control the power, not you. We control the dams, not you. You have taken full control through your attorneys, which I'm impressed. Very impressive work. Here's my problem. This contract on the purchase and sale agreement is 15 years, but we do have 2 5-year extensions, and we do have opt-out provisions on this contract, which we need to look at very close, because in my opinion, we might want to step out of this in 5 years. In my opinion, due to climate change, and we begin losing money on this, we might want to step out of this in 5 years. In my opinion, instead of subsidizing my good friends at Portland General Electric, which I think we're doing, we should set a number on the net that you will pay us a certain amount. How about $500,000 a year to begin with? You just pay us that amount of money. And as far as you saying you can't maintain these dams, let's get real, Portland General Electric. You know how to maintain these dams. And you know that since these have been here so many years, we could be talking a tremendous amount of maintenance and costs here. Now, by your agreements, it states that once you get past a certain point on the maintenance side and the cost, you might come back to the city and say, hey, here's a bill, now pay it. That's not being calculated in all this optimism on this 15-year projected bull. I won't put the last name on this, but if you want to project out 15 years and tell me I'm going to be making income, put it in writing. And you put it in writing how much money I'm going to be making. This is debt-free. The city controls this. PGE, this is not your power till we sign this agreement. I think we should bring in Pacific Power. I think we should have other bids coming in. And I think, PGE, you should just guarantee us a certain amount of money at the end of each year, and you cover every additional cost. And on these maintenance agreements, you just use them as subcontractors, and you pay them. And don't put a tariff on these power lines that we paid for. Come on, give me a break. All confidential, can't disclose it to the public. Let's get real, PGE. Give us a number, tell us what we're going to make, or don't do the deal. Don't sign this.
All right. Thank you. Colleagues, any further discussion on Commissioner Fritz?
Yeah, I have a question. The risk is in the first 3 years. So what is the fund that would offset a downtime in 3 years?
There is currently a $1.8 million reserve. You've had the CFO identify a small but plausible risk in the first few years. There are other events that have been identified along the way, including some kind of catastrophic failure of the systems, the need for maintenance that's not budgeted or the like. Out of an abundance of caution, I agree with the mayor that we should keep that whatever the net revenue is in the reserve until we're confident that the deal is secure, and then it's the council that can decide whether to distribute any of that money and for what purpose.
Thank you. That's good information about the $1.8 million reserve now. So what might happen is that if we lose $200,000, then that goes down to 1.6. Does the Bureau have, or do you have a sense of what should the reserve be for those other things that you mentioned?
There's a whole slew, and I what I want to just be very clear, Commissioner Fritz, is that there is no hidden agenda here in terms of grabbing general fund money that you and I might otherwise want to see go to parks maintenance, to services for homeless and the like. It is simply, we think, in consultation with the CFO, the mayor, and others, exceptionally prudent to hold that money until we're confident that it's a deal that pans out over time. And then that money, above whatever is recommended as a reasonable reserve, can be distributed to the general fund for any purpose.
Yeah,
and that remains the council's exclusive decision to make any during the life of the 15-year life of the agreement.
Yeah, and I certainly wasn't suggesting anything nefarious. I was just trying to understand the arithmetic. And presumably, the Portland Utility Board would be giving advice on the level of the reserve that's
sure.
necessary ongoing.
Sure.
Thank you.
Very good. Any further discussion, colleagues? I'll move this of 906 and 907 first. These are first readings of non-emergency ordinance.
If we could, let's vote on the amendment.
I'm going to get to 908 in a minute, Commissioner. 906 and 907, these are first readings of non-emergency ordinances. They move to second readings. The commissioners asked that be on August 30th. Could you please call the roll on the amendment to 908?
Saltzman.
Aye.
Fritz.
Well, thank you for this very clear presentation and also for the work of the panel as well as the community comments. I really appreciate the prudence and the very clear, transparent way that this is being brought to us. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Wheeler.
I think this is a great amendment, and I appreciate it, Commissioner Fish, and I appreciate you working with the finance team and the Bureau staff on the amendment in particular. And I think overall the package is a very solid one. There's nothing we do here that doesn't come with commensurate risk, but I think it's been clearly identified, and I'm certainly satisfied that we've got a good solution here.
Could I move to put the emergency clause on now so that then we can vote on it next week?
No, my request was that all three ordinances be held over for a vote on August 30th.
Yes, and we need to put the emergency. So you want to do the emergency clauses
yes.
then?
Yes.
Okay.
The amendment is adopted. This is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading as amended. Very good.
Just to be clear, Carla, all three will come back on August 30th.
Correct.
Thank you.
Colleagues, we...